I'm Steven.
I'm Chris.
I'm Stargate Pioneer.
And I'm the French-Canadian Sensation.
And we're the official GunnaGeek.com podcast, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the one you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts
at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready.
Because geekiness begins in...
3, 2, 1.
Let's geek!
This is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We're a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, step out of your TARDIS and warm up your chimichangas, because this is PopX Cast.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
And welcome, everyone. This is PopX Cast, episode number 38, coming to you live right here on PopX.live. And holy cow, it's November the 20th. Can someone pinch me? What the heck happened to November?
I don't know.
It's gone, Joe.
Holy cow, guys. It's Turkey Week. Do you realize that?
I am looking forward to it. Gobble. Let's bring on the good food.
Gobble. Anyway, I'm so ready. You know, one of the most, and I'm going to go totally off on a tangent right now just because I can. I'm really tired. I just got in from New York last night. And so I have no filter. So I'm going to just, have you ever noticed when you eat a lot of turkey and stuffing that you fart a lot? What's up with that?
Whoa.
This just adds to it, Joe.
I know that there's a certain volume of flatulence that is to be had. It's just like, holy cow, guys. Okay, but, we're just going off on the topic. But, get ready for that. You might want to get some of that. If you're Cliff.
I'm just glad Austin's below you and not me.
Below me? No. But, just get some Yankee candles, light a candle, do something to counteract the sulfuric fumes that will emit from the under regions, if you will. But if you're Cliff Bodenweiser, just get some vinegar.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think Cliff and Joe probably both sit outside with the kids.
I don't know if Cliff's watching. I don't know if he ever watches PopX. He doesn't really watch PopX, but I love you, Cliff. You know you do.
We do.
All right, guys. Hey, welcome. This is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joe Burke, Central Florida seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We would like to welcome everyone joining us live in the PopX.live and Geeks.live chat room. Come on over and hang out with us and join the conversation, and also on YouTube Live, where we are talking with our friend Doug as we speak. He's hanging out. We got Corey Manuel, Lindsay Badger. Yeah, nice. Lindsay Badger's throwing it down over there as well. All right.
And I am Austin Burke, the Appalachian geek at heart. If y'all missed last week's episode 37, our Doctor Strange movie review, check out our official website at popxcast.com to check that out as well.
I did my Doctor Strange pose. Anyway, go ahead.
And as Joe already said a minute ago, I am Lindsay Badger, your favorite geeky Okie. And don't forget to head over to Google Play and iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to our show, catch up on all of our past shows, and make sure that you rate us 5 stars if you like what you hear, and leave us an awesome review, because we would love all of the love that you guys give us.
Absolutely. So, guys, I am literally running on fumes tonight. So, if I do apologize if I am lacking in energy,
it's going to be a fun show.
Yeah, I'm sleep deprived. Spent a whole week in New York City, riding and walking around on the subways. I don't know if you guys saw earlier in the clip, you know, that was the mannequin challenge, and all those people on the subway was my friends from Blue Man Group. Amazing. And we all decided, there was 32 of us on one subway car, and we all just froze for a solid 3 minutes. So it was really awesome. And Mike that runs our slideshow, he was actually a part of that. So if you get back and go on the replay, you'll see Mike there standing, and you'll see it was really cool. Mike, nobody knew that Mike was going to be there but me. But I guess, nobody from Team PopX, from the PopX land, if you will. But moving on, we got the news right now. This is PopX News.
Extra, extra, read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live right here on PopXcast.com.
All right, guys, leading off on the top of the list, we have, with Tim Miller's exit from Deadpool 2, 20th... Oh, no, look at that. Look, he's like, oh, crap. You know, yeah, no, 20th Century Fox has recruited David Leitch, who directed John Wick. Now, that's an interesting choice to take on the film. With that problem out of the way, Fox is ready on planning Deadpool 3, which have already alluded that they're going to be bringing out the X-Force. What? Which is amazing. That's going to be mind-blowing, where the Merc with a Mouth will be teaming up with X-Force. And the list of directors has already been started with Rupert Sanders. He did Snow White and the Huntsman, Ghost in the Shell, and then Drew Goddard, who wrote The Martian. Amazing film. And executive producing. He's also executive producing The Defenders, which is a new series coming to Netflix. And Magnus Martin's Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., of course, Luke Cage, are on top of the list as well for Deadpool. Right. So don't have no fear. The Merc with a Mouth is here. Just because Tim Miller's not in the picture doesn't mean that our beloved Ryan Reynolds is not going to have his fun. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. Nice. It looks like they
have a good lineup
there.
All right,
Lindsay. I want to say the John Wick director, he's done so many things for so many years, and he's always went under the radar until him and his buddy co-directed John Wick. I think this guy's perfect for Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
I really do. I think his action sensibilities and his comedic style, I think it's absolutely perfect. So I'm really excited about this.
All right, so we're going to go with Lindsay number two, and then Austin, you'll be there.
Cool. When Star Wars Rogue One hits theaters next month, we will get a first look at Transformers: The Last Night as the first trailer to roll out. It's going to be fun. Hey.
All right, so let me stop right here. All right, so we all know what Michael Bay has done for the franchise. Mm-hmm. It's a sore spot on the bottom of our undersides that we don't want to sit on. And so we're just sitting here recollecting the fact, all right, you know, I love the visuals of the Transformers, but it's the storyline. In the words of Doc Brown, something's got to be done about the story. Holy cow. Bring it together for the love of mankind.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. After five of them, I'm like Caesar and Pontius Pilate. I'm just going to wash my hands.
On the bright side, at least we know the trailer is going to be good, because that is the best part of Transformers. So the trailer is going to be good. Like, I know it's going to be good because it always hooks me and it turns out to be crap.
They show you the best scenes in the trailer and you get watching the movie and it's just a bunch of crappy dialogue.
Gosh.
Oh, geez.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's move on to DC. As previously mentioned, Kiersey Clemons will be making an appearance in Justice League as Iris West. There is another character rumored to make an appearance as the member of the Green Lantern Corps, which possibly could maybe be Hal Jordan.
Man, makes me want to go out and buy a lantern ring right now. I'm seriously. Hal Jordan, now, we're going to be talking about Hal Jordan in one of our upcoming series on our Origin series. A lot of people aren't familiar, properly formalized with an origin story of Hal Jordan and the original Green Lantern Corps. So we're going to be talking about that. in upcoming episodes in the 40s when we get up into that neck of the woods on the episodes. But I'm really excited that we're long overdue for a cinematic reboot of the Green Lantern.
Yes.
I mean, can I get an amen on that?
I think it's time. Mm-hmm. I think it's time.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, no disrespect to what Ryan Reynolds did, but I'll just leave that right there respectfully. So, okay, as previously mentioned, let's see, we got this CWDC Universe crossover is just about here, premiering on Monday, November the 28th, starting with Supergirl. Now, this is next week, guys. So this big crossover that we've been talking about for months and months, where Supergirl got signed on to the CW and now they're going to be doing a multi-four episode crossover between all four shows. It's here next week. We get this amazing story. And so the title of the crossover is called Invasion. Now that sounds really good. The teams will come together and fight an alien invasion by the Dominators, who wants to destroy all meta humans. Now this sounds like an amazing storyline. It sounds like it was something well thought out. Austin, Lindsay, what are your thoughts on this?
I am excited about it, but I'm kind of hesitant because I'm like, they're really hyping this up and I don't want to be let down by the bar raised high.
Kind of like a Transformers film.
So I go into it excited but hesitant.
Yeah, yeah,
that's true. I do think the idea of aliens, though. What a better way to bring them together? Aliens. I don't think they've really done that on the CW shows yet, so that could be cool.
Maybe. Yeah, but why? Why don't they just do zombies? I mean, you know, it just makes sense. You know, just
bring the Walking Dead crowd over.
You know, all
everybody's doing zombies these days.
But check it out. What if they brought back all the villains and all the heroes that have died from all the shows? And they're zombies.
Oh my God.
And they can't be killed.
Oh my God.
That'd be kind of cool.
You got to write somebody an email, man.
I don't know. Hey, I want to give a throw out to Luke hanging out with us over in the YouTube live chat room. We got Doug Hawks. We got Corey Manuel. You guys are rocking, and thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Cool. Well, earlier this summer, Marvel Comics announced that they would be following up their new Avengers run with a brand new comic called U.S. Avengers. The series would follow Robert DaCosta's as he and some of the very familiar faces trade in their global do-goods for foreign territory. To celebrate the new series, Marvel Comics is releasing a variant of covers focused on each of the 50 states. All of the cover images have been revealed already. And look at that. He's got the graphic of all of them. Boom.
That's cool. Dang. That is so cool.
So who's Kentucky?
Yeah, really? Okay.
Wait. I can't see that. Is it like, can we like, let me see if I can maximize this here. All right. So let's see here. We've got Florida. We've got Kentucky is, I don't know who Kentucky is. Is that the Torch?
Oklahoma got Thor. Oh. I'm happy.
Yeah. Okay. Who is Kentucky?
It looks like the Torch.
It might be the Torch.
Yeah, it could be.
I'll take that.
All right, okay. So we're looking at, let's see, where's Florida at on here? I don't see Florida. Wait, well, come
top
on.
Top, in the corner.
Top corner. Okay, that looks like, is that Cable?
It looks like Mrs. Incredible, but I know that's not right.
Crossing universes.
This is crazy. Yeah, so that's interesting right there.
That's very cool. That is very cool.
That is very cool. So, oh, interesting. So I guess go out and buy your 50 state. That's kind of like that time when the post office released the quarters and the stamps.
Oh,
you got to collect all 50 quarters.
All 50.
Got to collect all 50 because you know what? That's $3.99 an issue. So $3.99 times 50.
I think I have like 3 or 4 sets of quarters at this point.
I smell a money racket afoot. Anyway, moving on.
All right, well, let's move on to DC.
It's going to make me hundreds.
Animations has released the first trailer for Justice League Dark, something that I didn't even realize was coming out. The footage shows the Justice League scrambling to end a global phenomena caused by dark magic. People all over the world are being plagued with twisted nightmares and visions. The Justice League is at a loss. However, Batman believes John Constantine is just the man who can help end the crisis. And so begins the story of Justice League Dark. It is expected to hit DVD, Blu-ray, and digital download in early 2017. And guys, I thought this trailer was awesome. I really did. It's just exciting to see all these characters on screen together. What do you guys think?
I think it's going to be awesome.
I like seeing new characters show up.
New characters, exactly.
And not working with the same crew, but they're like intertwining all the different ones. Like Batman's working with Constantine. What? You know?
Well, it's not just Batman and Constantine. It's Constantine and Swamp Thing as well.
Oh, you're forgetting.
Can we get an amen for Swamp Thing? It's about time. Swamp Thing.
He makes everything groovy.
Yes.
Yeah, man. Swamp Thing.
He deserves a movie.
Yeah. He deserves. Swamp Thing deserves a reboot.
He does.
He deserves a reboot, man, because he's part of the
bring him back.
He's part of the dark mythology of DC Comics. Yes. But anywho, that's going to be awesome. It's going to be on DVD and Blu-ray. That's pretty cool in early 2017. So it's going to be a different story, something that we've not seen before. So I'm kind of excited about that. Mm-hmm. And from DC to Marvel Comics. All right, now this one's Marvel has opted to make the Inhumans into a TV series rather than a movie.
Wow.
This is an interesting move on Marvel's behalf. We'll discuss this here in just a second. As the characters have already been revealed in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and a sister series would make more sense. As of now, eight episodes have been ordered, and the first two will debut in IMAX theaters. Whoa, that's kind of cool. In the first two weeks of the summer 2017. Yeah, I've never heard of a television series debuting in IMAX. That's crazy. And the remainder will air on ABC starting in September. Interesting. Okay, so let's unpack this for a second. So we knew Inhumans was part of Marvel's Phase 4 as a film. Now they decided to pull it back and make it a television series, but with a double IMAX debut. Awesome. What do you think about that, man?
I will say this. I also heard that IMAX is actually producing this eight episodes. So they're actually funding it. So it will have a bigger budget than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So the effects are going to be, apparently Marvel trusts this enough to where they may not want to make it a movie, but they're investing quite a bit of money into this for a TV series. So I like the fact that it's eight episodes as well, because that's one of the complaints that some people have about some Netflix series that Marvel has done. Maybe it's too long, but eight episodes, I think this is cool.
And we're going to get into that with Luke Cage.
Absolutely.
And you know where I'm going with that too, Cottonmouth.
That was a fault that some people had with Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, but I think eight episodes is the perfect amount.
It is. And Stranger Things. Well, I'll just drop the mic right there.
There you go.
Done.
Absolutely.
You don't need to exacerbate a storyline and make it just fall short of where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stranger Things is so powerful in the eight episodes that it has. It's, oh my God, dude, I've watched it three times already and I just can't get enough of it. It's done so freaking well. And so eight episodes, I think it'll be good. And Austin, you told me that they're going to be funded through IMAX. That's going to be good. Cause that's going to beef up the visuals. So
yes,
it'll be interesting to see how that all turns out.
It really will be. Yeah.
It'd be a good investment. You never know.
Well, since we're talking about theaters, Doctor Strange is still at the top of the box office, closing out this week with a total of worldwide of $571 million. $1 million.
God.
Surpassing Ant-Man lifetime box office with
$520 million. Wow. I do believe Marvel has a hit. I mean, it's fresh, man. It's unlike anything they've ever done. And I think Marvel definitely is setting it up for probably a Doctor Strange part two at some point as well.
Oh, yeah.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm really excited. You know what? I'm not surprised that it surpassed Ant-Man.
It also surpassed, I believe, the first Thor, the first Captain America, and it's about to surpass The Dark World as well. So it's getting up there in all the Marvel movies. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yep.
But we're gonna go ahead and move on to our final topic. The Walking Dead has wrapped filming on season 7. During an interview, executive producer Scott M. Gimple stated that the show will have a completely different feel by the end of the season.
Ooh.
Okay.
So fans. I wonder what he meant by that. That's really opening up a can of worms that
teasing something crazy, apparently.
It's teasing something really big and drastic. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. Hopefully, I don't know where to go with that. I mean, you want Negan to be gone, but at the same time, I know that Andrew Lincoln as an actor has been looking for a long time to move away from his character, Rick. He's been wanting to go into other things and acting, but he's kind of been landlocked with Rick as a role. And I don't know. I mean, do you think Rick could die? Do you think Negan could die? I mean, we don't know. And that's the difference. So you can't go by the comic books versus the TV series because we've seen how that plays out. So, well, guys, that is the end of this week's news segment. So we're going to move into the actual topic of this week, and that is definitely Marvel's Luke Cage. Now, if you guys in the chat room have seen Luke Cage, throw it up and let me know. Say, hey, yeah, I finished it all. And so that way we know we're all on the same page with you. I know we got Luke and Doug and Corey and a few of the others hanging out with us on the YouTube live channel. Let us know. And so we would love to.
I know it's been out a while, but we're going to have to throw out, there will be spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Let's go ahead. As a matter of fact, let's go ahead and just play the spoiler alert sound clip right quick, and we'll be right back, guys.
Danger, danger. You are about to enter a Pop-X spoiler alert. Beyond this point, there is no return. You have been warned.
All right, so you have been warned officially. This is a spoiler alert. If you have not completed Marvel's Luke Cage, you would probably want to hit pause on the audio or video player right now and do that, and then come back and enjoy the little nuggets that we're going to be dropping here. So Marvel's Luke Cage is a 13-part series, and I'll do the first three, Austin, and we'll just do three, three, and three, and we'll just talk about these episodes just really briefly, because when we started, we know we wanted to do Luke Cage as an episode, but when you start getting into each episode, we can literally do an hour episode per each one. So we're just like, okay, so we're just going to have to briefly just kind of skim the surface of each episode. And then we're going to have to just dive into some of the more things that we were impacted by. So the moment of truth is the first episode. That's the first time we see Luke Cage in the series. And with tension building in the streets of Harlem, thanks to ruthless club owner Mr. Cottonmouth himself, Luke finds it increasingly difficult to live a quiet life. So Luke is trying to get away from everything. He's got a prison life behind him, and he's just trying to just hang out in Pop's barbershop, live a good life, do the right thing, and make a good dollar. And number two episode is a Code of the Streets, and that's Luke is pulled deeper into the fight for his neighborhood as a favor to an old friend, he tries to help a kid who's in trouble with Cottonmouth. So that kind of goes a little sour. And then episode number three, who's going to take the weight in the aftermath of the chaotic event at a favorite Harlem hangout, Luke needs to call to action and hits Cottonmouth where he'll feel it most. That's when he kind of gets the money. You know what I'm saying? But we're going to talk about, basically there's crime, there's corruption. Cottonmouth is at the top of this. And so, Lindsay, if you don't mind, go ahead and lead us into the next three.
We'll continue with episode four, Step in the Arena. As he rescues a victim of Cottonmouth's vengeance, Luke remembers his earlier life and the conspiracy that led to his superhuman strength. So this episode kind of takes you to a huge flashback of his prison days and mm-hmm. how he actually got his powers. And then we jump into episode five, Just Get a Rep. Cottonmouth strikes back at Luke by taking his vengeance out on some of the people of Harlem. And while Detective Knight and Scarf are face an unexpected threat. So these guys are trying to figure out like where Luke falls into the
Is he a good guy or is he a bad guy?
Yeah,
is he Cottonmouth?
Good, it's bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then episode six, Suckas Need Bodyguards.
Suckas.
It feels so weird saying suckas. After Cottonmouth and Scarf's bloody clash, Luke realizes that saving the community may turn former allies into enemies and enemies into allies. So this is kind of a little bit of a shift mid-season where you start seeing some things.
A turn of power. Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And I guess we'll go straight into episode 7, which is Manifest. So Mariah's political career comes under fire, and Cottonmouth picks up information that could put Luke on the run. And this is the episode for me that was the turning point in the entire series, because it shifts from Cottonmouth to the other member in the family mm-hmm. being the big crime boss. So this is kind of like the midway point through the entire series, where everything goes from one way to another. Mm-hmm. And then episode 8 is blowing up the spot. I feel so funny saying that. campaigns to turn the city and the police against Luke, and not even Misty or Claire may be able to save him. And this is when, you know, they're framing Luke. Luke is turning into the bad guy in some people's eyes, but there's still those, you know, Luke Cage supporters.
Faithful few,
and,
yeah,
the faithful Luke Cage supporters, it kind of splits the city down the middle, if you will. And then episode 9 is, I want to say DQYCK. That's right. That's right.
Yep.
So with Luke wounded and on the run, Misty faces a soul-searching interrogation. Mariah's rise to power takes a dark turn. So this is when she goes from...
Is that when she loses her mind?
Yeah, this is when she goes to completely
She loses
crazy.
Her crap. Yeah,
she really does. And I think this is puts into perspective that she really was the villain. You know, not the whole time, but she was the one that was destined.
She's
to
the mastermind. She's the mastermind exactly. behind it all. Yeah,
exactly. And she's not the puppet. She's the puppet, but she's not the person pulling the strings.
Exactly.
Behind,
right? And so now episode leads us in, and I'll finish this up here. Take it personal. Luke gets closer to the truth about Reva and her part in his fate, while Mariah wrestles with morality of her new role. And this is after she has actually killed Cottonmouth. She pushed him off the balcony and beat his head open with
that was
pretty nasty. And Misty hunts for Luke in episode 11. Yeah, now you're mine. In one bold move, a friend from his past puts Luke on the defensive. Misty in the dire straits and Harlem's safety in jeopardy. And that is the episode where Luke seeks out his former prisoner doctor, and he's injured. And that's when we find out that Diamondback has injured him with a bullet. So he's in the recovery phase. He's trying to find that doctor, because part of the story is Diamondback has these shells that penetrate Luke's skin.
Judas bullets.
Yeah. So then that leads us into episode 12, which is a soliloquy of chaos. Misty digs deeper for the truth as neighborhood's power players throw the city into confusion. And last but not least, the finale of it all, episode 13. You know my steez. This is with all Harlem bearing witness. Luke takes on the fight of his life in hopes of emerging as a defender. Do you get that? And the defender his city needs. Now, so with that, I will share real briefly some of my open comments about Luke Cage. And this is just coming from me personally, and then we'll go into Lindsay.
Before you dive in, I want to say hi to Stacy over in the chat.
Stacy. Hi, Stacy. Thank you for hanging out with us. I'll share some of my stuff. Austin will share some of his, and then Lindsay will share some of hers. But this is just some of the thoughts that, you know, and a good thing about having Lindsay and Austin here and myself is you're getting three different takes on the series itself. And you're also getting the feminine perspective from Lindsay as well, which is really important, because this is such a very diverse series. I mean, it's Harlem, it's rough, it's black community, and it's
really powerful women roles in this too.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. So Luke Cage for me captured the rawness of living and growing up on the streets of Harlem, New York. I mean, from the soundtrack to the grittiness of the one shots, each scene, the dialogue, and the soundtrack, it was seriously carefully woven into the fabric of black culture and the movements that they inspired throughout pop culture. From references to Malcolm X, Notorious B.I.G., and to the rhythmic jams of Mr. Charles Bradley, Method Man, and the lovely Sharon Jones, each episode is riddled with Easter eggs, references, throwbacks, and Harlem's nostalgia. Honestly, I've never seen a series capture a culture so perfectly. And I'm not talking about Marvel culture. I'm talking about capturing the essence of Harlem itself. And so I've never seen that. And you kind of forget that you're watching a superhero themed show for a little while as you're kind of walking the streets of Harlem with Luke and the gang. And at the heart of the show, it kind of captures the true lifestyle of the black man and the struggle that he has to face in today's society. And Luke Cage is simply the culture's every man for the black man. Does that make sense? He's the Superman. He's the power man. You can't penetrate him. His skin can't be cut. He's bulletproof. And so he's the bulletproof black man for the society. And that's pretty powerful, especially for black culture as a whole. So Luke Cage is exactly the sort of hero that Marvel needs to be bringing into the life right now. There's no ignoring it. And the relevance or significance of a bulletproof black man as a superhero and a showrunner. You got Cheo Cocker. I mean, this guy looks the part, walks the part, acts the part, and he takes the weightiness of the premise that puts it to good use. I mean, he embodies Luke Cage. And Marvel's Luke Cage is steeped in the right sort of political commentary where you've got, we were talking about it earlier, with crime and just propaganda and just getting into the scene and just doing things illegally and trying to bank money and it's raw, it's gritty. And one of the show's best strengths is how it captures the spirit of Harlem. The neighborhood is as much of a character as Luke himself. Misty Knight, you got Mariah Dillard, or any of the key players in season one. Each of Marvel's Netflix shows have their own distinct identities, if you've noticed. And Luke Cage comes through in depictions of Harlem, from the music, like we had talked about, to the incredible hip-hop-filled soundtrack and the soul of the series, to the shooting locations of the characters, to the conflicts. Cheo Cocker makes Marvel's Luke Cage feel tonally distinct from its Hell's Kitchen counterpart, Daredevil and Jessica Jones. So you're getting two sides of Manhattan here. You're getting Hell's Kitchen, which is Lower Manhattan, and you're getting Harlem, which is Upper East Side. And so you're getting two different cultures, two different societies, and it's really cool how they captured that. And I got to just a little bit more, bear with me, and then we'll let Austin have his. It's very pretty clear in season one that the mysterious Diamondback, played by Eric Leray Harvey, he's kind of the real threat for Luke to fight. And unfortunately, he is for me, the weakest link in the season. And he really drags down it towards the back half of the season. You kind of get a little bit of I don't know what they did with I don't know what they did with Cottonmouth. I mean, it's just weird. And then you got Diamondback coming in, and he just really shouldn't have been there. He should have been more in like a past remnant of Luke's past or something like that. I don't know. But it's interesting when you look at Diamondback, it turns out to be kind of a half-baked character who frequently is more of a cartoonish than he is a fear-inducing enemy, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. His storyline is that would be benefited from more. Yeah, it's just really weird. It's just like, okay, so here's Diamondback, and he has this really weird suit. And he's got these bullets that can penetrate Luke's Cage skin.
And those crazy eyes, you guys. Seriously.
Yeah. I mean, crack cocaine, man. Can we say crack? But Marvel's Luke Cage doesn't reach the heights of Daredevil and Jessica Jones. And it is flawed towards the second half, and it ends up diminishing what was otherwise pretty much a fantastic season. Austin had hinted around episode 7 was kind of the turning point. There was a turning point, and it was just too long. It was drawn out. And so even though in the entirety of Marvel's Luke Cage wasn't complete win, he is still a character that I can't wait to see more of in future Netflix shows like 2017's The Defenders. Now, if I were rating Luke Cage myself, I would give it a strong 8.5 just for the reflection of...
That's pretty high.
Yeah, it is high. I mean, despite the character flaws in the development of Diamondback, I got to look past that because they captured the true essence of black culture living in Harlem, New York. Yeah. And just everything around that, with the inclusion of a Method Man and just all the artists that came together for the soundtrack, phenomenal. And I will shut up after that.
Yeah. No, Joe, listen, I absolutely loved all of your points. So I guess it's it's my turn to give my little spiel mm-hmm. about Luke Cage. So for me, Luke Cage has always kind of been a character that is really primed for a live action version. When Marvel first gave us the concept that they were doing a shared universe, he was a character that many people were calling for because there's a lot of fans of Luke Cage from the comics. Mm-hmm. And I personally wasn't familiar with the character around, say, 2010 is like my junior year of high school. And that's when I was first exposed to his story. So I was able to learn about, you know, his heroes for hire identity and his relationship with Iron Fist. But most importantly, his relationship with Harlem, which is what I think they captured very well in the series. Mm-hmm. So I was pumped to see him on screen. And what a better home for Luke Cage than Netflix, which allows the right amount of like greediness and the right amount of darkness, which mm-hmm. is exactly what Luke Cage needs. And I know we all feel the same way about Netflix. It's the gift that just keeps on giving, baby. And these Marvel
Amen.
Shows.
Amen.
Amen. And these Marvel shows just could be fine. I enjoyed Daredevil more and more as it went on. I love season one, love season two even more. And I thought Jessica Jones had a great first season as well. And Luke Cage, for me, continues this trend. Although this one has been a tad bit more divisive than the other two, I believe it's almost as good as Jessica Jones. Some people believe better. I would still put it third, but I need to watch it again. I had a great time with Luke Cage, guys. It's probably the most, may not be the best, but it for me is the most fun of all the Netflix shows because Luke Cage, the character, brings a sense of joy and hope to this series, whereas the other two are very dark. Luke is also my favorite Netflix hero. He is just the guy with the best personality. And honestly, he's the one that I would want to hang out with. Like, just go, like, get a coffee with and talk yeah. to. Like, Luke, what's up? He's the guy for me that I think is.
You want to go get coffee with Luke?
You probably have, like, a secret handshake or something.
You seriously want to get. Wait a minute. Let me pause. You seriously want to get coffee with Luke? Because we all know what he wants when he wants coffee. He never drinks coffee. You know what kind of coffee he likes, right?
Not
well,
that
mean,
kind of coffee.
Yeah, he likes his
coffee with
me. He doesn't like cream in his coffee. Let me tell you that.
They will get 2 years up. Wow.
This is where we can scared noism. I digress.
He's a scary guy. I don't know, y'all. But
move along.
But yeah, but he's the coolest guy in the room. I mean, I just want to hang out with the guy. So getting into the highlights of the series. For me, the highlight of Cage as a whole was the soundtrack. Mm. This has the old-fashioned hip-hop rap feel with a pinch of the new flavor added in every single episode. The bands and the singers who performed in the bar were all incredible, with the highlight for me being the song. I don't know if you guys remember this. Long Live the Chief. You guys remember that song? Oh, man. That song took the story up to that episode, explained it perfectly, and I thought it was brilliant. I think this has the best, I don't want to say the best soundtrack Marvel's ever done because you got Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's definitely close. Mm-hmm. I also love how they made Harlem, like Joe said, a character, how they handled most of the side characters. They gave women a strong presence in the show. Misty and Claire were both just, they were BA, okay? They were awesome, and I can't wait to see more of them. I also, Pops. Can we talk about Pops?
Yeah,
great role.
Can we have a moment of silence for Pops? My God, man. All right, poor. All right.
Poor Pops, man.
Poor Pops.
We saw his death from a mile away. When he first popped up, I'm like, that dude is
yeah, he
but
did.
When he died, that broke my heart.
He gone.
I was heartbroken.
He gone.
He was dead. But I knew he was going to die, but when he died, it affected me. I also want to give a huge shout out to the actor that portrayed Cottonmouth. You, sir, I'm talking to you. You. Man who played Cottonmouth, you brought us the best villain I have ever seen in a Marvel Netflix show, and you are the reason that those first 7 episodes worked so well for me. I love this character, and this is the first time that I've gotten mad that a villain was killed because he was perfect for Luke Cage, and I am appalled that we were never able to see him confront Luke Cage in a final, I don't know how they would have really fought, but just a confrontation at the end.
Yeah, you know? Let me pause you there. You know, we had all this buildup for Cottonmouth.
Yes.
And we had all this buildup. I mean, he was the creme de la creme, the mastermind, the kingpin of Harlem, if you will.
Yes, he was.
And here we are in a fell swoop. His sister, Mariah, goes berserk off her rocker and pushes him pushes him out the glass window on the balcony of his bar and kills him with the microphone stand. And it's just like, all right, so you got this powerful man who with a snap of his finger can kill 15 men on the streets of Harlem, mm-hmm. and he's killed by his dang sister.
Sister or cousin?
His sister, wasn't it? Something like that.
It don't matter. They're close.
They're kin folk. They're kin. That's all. All right. You continue. Continue on.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads me right into my negatives. So after Cottonmouth was killed, that's when the show kind of took a turn for me, as it did, I assume, everybody else. Daredevil and Jessica Jones got better as they went, whereas Luke Cage, I feel, kind of got worse. And I hate to say that. It just felt long. They dragged out these meaningless storylines, and the characters that I wanted to see got less screen time. Mm-hmm. So the villains remaining after Cottonmouth died were good, with one exception for me. Shades is just cool, man. Yeah. I don't want to do what Shades does, but I just want to be like Shades, because Shades is cool. Mariah, for me, had a great story arc, which makes for a good antagonist, because the best antagonists have story arcs like that come full circle. And although Diamondback gave us some great banter and some great fight scenes, just felt like a cartoon to me.
Yeah.
You know, he was just so over the top, and everybody else in the show so grounded. And it's just like it shifted tones. Like the show had a tone up to, I believe, episode like 7, 8. And then when Diamondback shows up, it's a completely different tone, and I don't like that.
It's like somebody got rid of the director and got a new director midway through this. I don't know what happened.
There's a personnel change.
Yeah. I don't know. Absolutely. I don't know. Yeah.
And that for me affected the entire series. So final thoughts here. I'm going to wrap this up. I would have preferred some better payoffs to some storylines and a stronger villain at the end, but that does not take away from how much fun I had with Luke Cage. I think this is an important series in terms of culture and relevance. And I also think this is something that people are going to rewatch because they want to know, was it really those last few episodes? Was it really those first few episodes? This is going to be rewatched over and over. And I do think Marvel has another hit on their hands. It's not a masterpiece, but it is a success for Marvel. So if I was to rate this, I would go a solid 8 out of 10.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
All right, Lindsay Badger, you're up.
All right, I'm going to wrap it up. Okay, guys, well, for starters, I didn't know who Luke Cage was until his appearance in Netflix's Jessica Jones series. I am the greenest of all this panel, so you guys just bear with me, okay? When starting the Luke Cage series, I still didn't really know a whole lot about Luke Cage, even after watching Jessica Jones. There was no real origin story or a footprint that kind of told you a little bit of his comic history. Basically, all I knew was that he was a gentle giant with massive strength and unbreakable skin. He was a widower that had a fling with Jessica Jones. His bar got blown up and he got shot in the head with a shotgun. That was about it. That's what you're left with without knowing any prior knowledge to this guy. So not knowing anything about his past or where he came from, the references they made to the 1970s comics were totally over my head, totally missed them until I came back later after reading articles and stuff. And I was like, oh, that makes sense now. But however, I did catch a lot of the references to the Avengers, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, mm-hmm. which were nice, subtle, like Marvel Cinematic Universe connections that weren't like in your face, but they were there to make sure that all of that was connected. But the most obvious one was the street hustler that was selling the DVDs of the incident and calling them all by super wrong names. And it actually just made me laugh at the guy. So that was like one of a funny little point there. But the strongest MCU tie though was Claire. She plays a significant role in Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Luke Cage, seamlessly tying all three of the Netflix series together. I think she's kind of the glue that makes it all stick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, okay, forgive me for my Midwestern ignorance, but for the longest time I was confused about whether Hell's Kitchen and Harlem geographically were the same place or two different places. They were both in Manhattan, but I have no reference to boroughs and that Manhattan is one and there's little. So, I mean, you guys are just going to have to help me clarify this a little bit. Right, I think Joe did that a little bit.
All right, so look, this is lower Manhattan. And okay. right here is on the coast of the Hudson. This is Hell's Kitchen. Up here where my finger is, this is Harlem. So okay. Hell's Kitchen is between probably 44th and maybe 55th. And okay. So it's those streets right there. And then Harlem starts at 125th.
How far would you say those are apart, Joe?
Basically, they're just two different communities.
Probably
on top of each other?
70 blocks apart, 60, 70 blocks apart.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're close. So I could see where that could be a little bit of a confusion. Yeah. You have different people talking about the same areas.
Yeah. So
okay. Well, I just broke him up into good guys and bad guys. So Luke basically walks around with a little rain cloud over his head, constantly carrying around this heavy burden of his past that you really don't learn about until in the middle of the series. And you're like, dude, can we please get past this? And eventually he finally takes on his heroic role in that he's meant to play out. But boy, it was so slow getting him there for me. It felt like the development of his character seriously was dragging just a little bit more than mm-hmm. it probably should have. I think that it could have moved a little bit faster and it would have engaged me a little bit more in his character. But Pop, dude, he is my hero. He was only in the show for like two episodes, but he was my hero. He was Luke's mentor and friend. He encouraged him to stop living in the past and move forward, using his powers for the greater good. And Pop was a shining light. The entire neighborhood looked up to him as a role model. I loved his character so much. But his incredibly tragic death, and I am not going to lie, I did cry when he died. I'm not going to lie.
It was a little sad. It was a little sad. Yeah, it was very emotional.
But his death was the fire that put Luke's rear in gear. It caused him to stop sulking about and take action. So, I mean, it's just, you know, he's just, thank you, Pop, for getting him off his butt and out the front door.
Always move forward. Always move forward.
Forward always.
Yes.
All right, moving on. Misty Knight, I felt like her introduction could have been done completely differently and still have been so effective. Her one night stand with Luke did not play any significant role in their relationship over the entire storyline at all. It made their interactions a little bit awkward, and that's when she wasn't hell-bent on throwing him in jail.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like the writers were just like, oh, hey, we need a love scene. Let's just throw that in here right here.
Because we're going off the cusp of Jessica Jones.
Jones is full of all of that.
It was porno right there.
I don't feel, aside from that, I appreciate Misty Knight for her intensely strong female role and her persistence on finding the truth, even if it required calling out her own partner. And she is a highly respectable character throughout the whole thing, even though you almost feel like she's a little bit of a bad guy because she always throws that, you know, the wrench in the gears of the whole overall plan. But mm-hmm. overall, I think, you know, she means well, guys. She means well. All right. The last good guy that I want to cover is Miss Claire. If there's going to be any love interest at all in this show, I would have guessed that it would have been with Claire, even in the slightest bit. She was loyal to Luke to the very end. She cared for him and was always by his side. The woman did almost killed him, trying to save him.
Mm-hmm.
But again, she was another incredibly strong female role, doing all that she could to do what was right. So she's my favorite. I love her.
It was actually dropped on Superhero Hype this week. They're filming The Defenders up in Manhattan right now under a secret code name. And a shot with Luke Cage was filmed with Claire, and they were kissing.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Some fan caught it on the street. And your little story is folding through. There you go.
Okay, so let me dive into the bad guys real quick. It's not going to take too much longer. Okay, so when it comes to the bad guys, Cottonmouth was a decent one. And by decent, I mean he was really actually pretty darn good. I approve of his message as a bad guy. He was the king of his castle or club in this instance, always dressed to the nines, but was never afraid to get his hands dirty to send a message. His weakness and downfall was his cousin or sister. We haven't decided this yet. Mariah. I kind of wish that he would have lived to pair up with Mariah and take down Diamond back. And then they could all go balls to the wall with Luke Cage. I think that would have been a better ending, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah. It would have been, you know, if they would have gotten rid of Diamond back early on, and yeah, just got rid of his. I mean, Mariah would have been a so much more of a better character in the endgame.
Okay, so let me dive into Mariah a little bit. She's an interesting character to watch develop. She really changed the most, I think, through this whole show. She has this constant internal battle going on where she has the need or the want to do what's right, but she always constantly turns to the dark side to get things done. But her view of what's right has been skewed by her violent upbringing of being in a criminal family, basically since she was born. And she loves the image of being a public servant as a heroine, per se, for the neighborhood. That is until her dirty deeds get exposed, and then all of that goes downhill. And she turns on her cousin, she takes over his club, and it wasn't really something I expected. I guess I probably should have, but I didn't. She's a strong leader, but I didn't really see her to be a massive crime boss like she ended up becoming. Didn't seem to be committed to the whole bad guy thing at first, but now that she had had a taste of this power, she had become drunk with the power and all that goes into being a bad girl moving forward, completely killing off anything that was possibly going to be good at all. Mm-hmm. So she kind of herself turned into a bad mamma jamma. Kind of liked that a little bit. She's super strong and scary. Now, Shades, I'm going to have to go with Austin. He is the biggest... B.A.
B.A.
B.A. He is my favorite bad guy. He's smart, tough, loyal to nobody but himself. And it's a wonder that Luke was skittish around him. I mean, he was like diving and ducking away whenever he was walking through the kitchen. He had nightmares about him. This kid, I mean, there's a reason why. He's always 10 steps ahead of everybody else. Shade never was a fan of Cottonmouth. He played Mariah like a fiddle, and he turned on Diamondback whenever the moment was right. This guy was the ultimate bad guy. Now, as you guys have said before, Diamondback felt very thrown together at the last minute. Didn't show up until halfway through the series, but he sure was talked about a whole lot during the beginning half of the show.
Mm-hmm.
He was just this weird, crazy guy with a lot of hype and holds a grudge. The only significant thing that he really did was show up and fight Luke Cage in some strange power suit at the end. Could have done better on this character, guys. I was really, really disappointed in Diamondback.
Yeah, I think
the grand finale.
I think we all agreed on that one. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So overall, I think Luke Cage was a pretty good series. I appreciate the celebration of the African-American culture that is shown throughout, woven, and you guys have got into detail on those. Love the empowering Method Man freestyle moment at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Loved that. That was cool. The storyline progression was slow and dragged at times, but it was entertaining and a great introduction to a lesser-known superhero. I definitely walked away knowing more about Luke Cage than I ever thought I wanted to know, and I love how Marvel is finding ways to reintroduce the B-list heroes from the comics, shining new light on a vast collection of incredible stories that have been forgotten over time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would rate Luke Cage at a 7.3.
Okay.
It's not bad.
That's not bad. That's not bad from a female perspective. And so there is Lindsay's and Austin and myself's amazing wrap-up. And Lindsay Badger, you really put your time and homework into that. Wow, I'm thoroughly impressed.
Thank you.
That was amazing. And so as we do that, we're going to wrap up with some Easter eggs. Now, you know, when we do these, we do movie reviews or series reviews, we always like to give you some little things, some little nuggets, if you will, that you may or may not know. And we'll just take turns on these. Netflix cameos is the first Easter egg. We got 14 of them. And so there were plenty of cameos for other Netflix MCU characters in Luke Cage, though not always the ones you'd expect. Luke's old flame, Jessica Jones, was only mentioned in passing just a couple of times. There were also various offhand references to Daredevil, Wilson Fisk, and the Punisher over the course of the season. Instead, it seems like Rosario Dawson's Claire Temple is the glue, like you said, Lindsay Badger, that will hold this shared superhero universe together, as Claire played a pretty significant role in the show. We also saw Rob Morgan's Turk Barrett playing chess in Pop's Barbershop before heading back to Hell's Kitchen.
Right.
Yep, do you remember that? Turk and Trish Walker, Rachel Taylor, has an audio cameo when an episode of her talk show can be heard on the radio. We know Claire We know her from, well, not her, Rachel Taylor, rather. We know her from Daredevil.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Hip-hop references. Hip-hop music is in the show's DNA, and there's plenty of homages outside of the show's memorable soundtrack. Every episode title is taken from a different track by the group Gangstar.
I love this. I love that.
After being heavily influenced by the music of the Wu-Tang Clan, Luke Cage as Method Man make a cameo appearance in episode 12, where he's rescued from a convenience store robbery by Luke. And it's no convenience that Cottonmouth has a giant photo of the late Biggie Smalls in his office. As actor Mahershala, oh my gosh, you guys are going to have to help me with that one.
Mahershala Ali.
modeled his performance after him. That is cool. I noticed awesome. The Biggie Smalls one. You can't miss it.
That is so awesome.
There he is, the picture. That is so awesome. He's standing in front of the picture right there. I love it.
He's the king. Long live the chief. So moving on to Misty Knight's arms. So one of Misty Knight's defining characteristics in the comics is the fact that she has a cybernetic arm designed by Tony Stark, no less. Misty being shot in the arm in episode 10 might be paving the way. This would be cool for the upgrade in season 2. Hopefully, that will also mean we'll finally see Stark put in an appearance in one of these shows. How cool would that be, guys?
That would be really, really awesome.
Finally, an A-lister in a B-lister show. That would be amazing. There you go. That would be amazing marriage. So we have number 4 here, Alfre Woodard's MCU connection. Now, this is actually the second MCU appearance of Alfre Woodard. He has made in 2016 beyond Mariah Dillard, who she played here in Daredevil. She also played the grieving mother who accused Tony Stark in Captain America Civil War that he killed her son in Sokovia. So you remember that. So we're not sure why Marvel cast the same actress in two completely different roles, but it seems that Mariah Dillard and Miriam Sharp share similar roles on the superhero community.
Wow. That's
interesting. Yeah.
All right, well, number 5, the man himself, Stan Lee, has yet to appear in the flesh in any of the Netflix shows, but Luke Cage kept up the tradition of including visual cameos of Lee as a police officer after his photo has seen in both Daredevil and Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
In episode 12, Lee's face is plastered on a poster that reads, "See crime? Report it." And look at there. Great. Got it. It's right there on the window of the shop.
That is so great.
Can't miss it.
As soon as I saw that, I flailed my arms and yelled. It was just seeing his face is awesome.
There it is.
There he is. So moving on to Colleen Wing. Colleen Wing is a martial arts expert and Misty Knight's frequent partner in the comics. In the final episode, this appears to be setting up Colleen's MCU debut. When Claire checks out a flyer for her martial arts class. So this is definitely, in my opinion, setting her up to be in a future MCU project. So that's pretty cool.
Very nice. And so also number 7 here, we have Luke's classic 70s costume. Now, this is so cool right here, guys. Check this out. While he sticks mainly to civilian clothes in the show, back in the 70s, Luke Cage was known for wearing one of the more flamboyantly costumes in the superhero Marvel Comics universe. The show paid homage to that look, first with Luke's yellow-lined hoodie, and then by actually having him don the flashy yellow shirt and the chains, and of course the headpiece and the cufflinks, which was awesome. Those were actually from Seagate as he escaped from the actual event that made him superhuman.
Perfect. All right. Number 8, Power Man, Hero for Hire. In the comics, Luke once went by the codename Power Man and formed a detective agency called Heroes for Hire with his buddy Iron Fist. The show paid tribute to both of those elements in the first couple of episodes, with Pop playfully calling Luke Power Man and Luke telling his landlord, "I'm not for hire." The end of the season hinted that Pop's barbershop might end up being Luke's headquarters after it keeps getting destroyed.
Oh, that is so perfect. Oh, perfect.
These Easter eggs are awesome, man.
Yeah.
They are great.
So let's move on to another one that was very prominent in the show. Justin Hammer and Seagate. So we've seen a little of Tony Stark's nemesis, Justin Hammer, since 2010's Iron Man 2, which is why it was so interesting to see Luke Cage make multiple references to the crooked businessman and his weapons technology. The focus on Seagate Prison also ties into the Marvel one-shot short film Hail to the King, which was the last time Hammer was seen in the flesh. This is something that I realized was happening throughout the episodes. They keep mentioning Justin Hammer. I'm like, oh my, why are they have to be doing this for a reason? So maybe we'll see him sometime.
Yeah, there is a Netflix short, not a short, it's on YouTube actually, from Marvel, as Hail to the King, which follows the Mandarin, if you will. Remember that? And it follows him into prison, and that's when we see Justin Hammer, and we see what's caught up with him. So if you haven't seen that, get on YouTube and Google Hail to the King, Seagate. All right, so moving forward, we have Timely Trash. One episode features a sign advertising a company called Timely Trash. And look, if you see right there, that logo has a little shield on it. Well, the name and the logo are actually an homage to Timely Comics, which was the original name for Marvel back in the 1940s.
That's right. It was. I remember that from our history lessons.
Right?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Like that one.
All right, number 11, Barack Obama. Thanks to Iron Man 3, it's been established that the character named Matthew Ellis is the current president. In U.S. president in the MCU, but Luke Cage includes multiple references to Barack Obama. Perhaps Obama lost his re-election bid after failing to prevent the Chitauri invasion.
Yeah, Chitauri invasion. That's the Avengers. Avengers episode one when Loki goes into outer space and the Chitauris come into New York, and that's the invasion.
That's so interesting.
Wow. Yes.
Okay, so moving on to Spider-Woman. Okay. What? This one is probably a stretch, but it's worth pointing out anyway. Multiple key scenes take place at Mount Olivet Church, a familiar Harlem landmark that also happens to be a frequent haunt of Spider-Woman in the comics, who refers to its cemetery? Yeah, there you go. Yeah. As her quiet place. So are they making a reference to Spider-Woman?
I believe they are. I believe they just did.
Who has the rights to Spider? Is it Sony, correct? Because they have Spider-Man, so wouldn't they have Spider-Woman?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think Spider-Woman is on the table in terms of Sony, because it's
somebody
not in Peter.
Contract.
It's not in Peter Parker's wheelhouse if you think about it, but okay. So number 13, here we go. Luke's reading habits. This is number 13. It seems that every book that Luke reads in the show is in some way a reflection on himself. Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man is a story about a black man rendered invisible to white society, while both Walter Mosley's Little Green and Chester Himes' The Heat's On deal with heroic African-American detectives. So it looks like that every book has a direct influence and reflection of Mr. Luke Cage.
Yep. All right. Well, the last one, ladies and gentlemen, number 14, Iron Man 3. You might have gotten a sense of deja vu when Luke scared off one of the gangsters threatening Connie in episode 1. That's because the line, "I don't even need these
blanks.
N words, man."
Yeah,
is an intentional nod to a similar scene from Iron Man 3. Luke Cage showrunner Chio Coker has revealed that was his homage to the filmmaker Shane Black in the line, "I don't even like working here," said by the henchman in the Marvel movie.
Yep. Yeah, if you remember when in Iron Man 3, one of the prisoner guards says, "I don't even like working here." And so that was kind of it's weird though. There's a lot of like Iron Man, Tony Stark stuff in Luke Cage. And then when you start looking at the Easter eggs and you start diving into the Hammer references and even with Christie getting the Misty Knight's arm, which is built by Tony Stark, and her being shot in one of the last episodes. We're bound to see Tony Stark, RDJ.
Maybe they're setting something up.
I don't know, man. And so there's they have literally thrown so many major balls out there. It's just untelling where it's going to go. But well, guys, that is our Luke Cage episode.
We made it to the end.
Cool. We did. And so that was truly awesome. That was fun. And
that was
so
cool.
We highly recommend, if you haven't seen all 13 episodes or if you're just halfway through, go ahead and finish it. Enjoy it. It's a great series. And we at Team PopX, we truly love it. And we think it's a great series that reflects Marvel MCU. But PopX has a hotline. And always, if you have something exciting going on, or you get something off the shelves, or you see something in the theater, or just around geek culture in general, let us know on our PopX hotline. And that is 850-417-7679. And that's 850-417-POPX.
Mm-hmm. Also, we are part of an amazing network called the Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to GonnaGeek.com and check out some amazing podcasts on our home network. Also, follow us on social media. We have Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Patreon, Twitter, Pinterest, at PopXcast. Email us at PopXcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from our listeners. And for future and past shows, we have a website, www.PopXcast.com as well. I am Austin Burke. I'm at the Burkinator with a 3 instead of the E. It's like the Baconator, but it's me. I also have a YouTube channel. I do movie reviews and things like that. So if you ever get time, watch it or don't. It's fine. It's whatever you
want to
do.
Lindsay, how can they get a hold of you on the Twitters?
You can find me, Lindsay Badger, pretty much on any platform at LR Badger on the interwebs.
On the interwebs. And so, of course, I am Mr. Joe Burke, and I am ROTCAV at Rotcab on the web. And of course, hats off to this amazing Team PopX who comes together every weekend right here on PopX stuff. I want to say hats off to Miss Lindsay Badger and hats off to Austin Burke and Mr. Much Love to Mike Ippolito.
We love Mike.
My knight in shining armor and to the slides.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Wade Wilson. How you doing, man?
Mike is dead.
It's good to see you. All right, so please join us for next week's episode. This is the last episode of November. Holy cow, guys.
What?
This is cray cray. I don't know what to do.
This may be the last week of November, but it's the first in a new series that we're starting.
We're doing the episode number 39 will be origin stories. We're going to give you the origin stories of a hero and a villain. We're going to be diving into Killer Croc and Aquaman.
Nice.
So it's going to be really cool. We're going to talk about it, share it, and it's going to be really fun. So it's an exciting new concept. Actually, Lindsay Badger birthed the idea, and we just went with it, and we made it into this really cool thing. So
right out of me.
Yep. Wow. On that note,
I think
we're done here. From all of us here at PopXcast, thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Be sure to hit subscribe over on iTunes. And you know what, guys? Don't do anything I wouldn't do. And, you know, if the light's on and you hear people bumping, don't come a-rumping, okay? Take care, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Bye.
Later.
Bye.
From everyone at PopXcast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at PopXcast. Get your geek on.